I don't know about you, but I like easy. But so little in life is easy. Most of the rest of the people, however, in the world have it far worse than we do when it comes to ease. Life in these here United States is so much easier than most people deal with, but I'm really thankful for easy. That hasn't always been the case in America. The men and women who birthed this nation into existence went through some very difficult days that required great personal sacrifice. I'm thinking about the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence that Thomas Jefferson had written. I'm thinking about the fact that many of them were putting their lives on the line when they put their signature on the bottom of that page, realizing that they could really give up their lives, their fortunes, and their families. In fact, Thomas Jefferson, to finish out the Declaration of Independence, ended with these words, "Whereunto we pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." 56 men counted the cost and decided that the idea of an America was worth sacrificing for. Would to God we felt the same way about Jesus Christ, that He was worth sacrificing everything for. Before you happily agree that Jesus Christ ought to receive that kind of worship from you, I want you to consider for a moment what it means to count the cost. The 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence certainly did. And it actually is a biblical concept. And I'm going to ask you to flip over from wherever you are to Luke 14 and consider what Jesus said about counting the cost when it came to following Him. Luke 14, verse number 28. The Bible says, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest happily, after he hath laid the foundation, and is not able to finish it, all that behold it, begin to mock him, saying, This man began to build, and was not able to finish." We've lived through a housing crisis, housing crunch here in the state of Arizona, and we've watched as buildings have gone up, and the builders have not been able to finish. They are foolish builders that didn't consider ahead of time the cost of building and finishing. An unfinished building does no good. And Jesus' comparison here is that a half-hearted disciple isn't any good either. So along with taking up the cross, which was our subject last week, Jesus taught that we must deny ourselves. This verse, Matthew chapter 16, verse 24, "Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." I want to highlight that expression in the verse today. If any man would come after me, let him deny himself. Now that is Jesus being bluntly honest. Aren't you glad that Jesus doesn't bait and switch with you? That He doesn't promise you one thing and deliver another? He tells us all up front that to follow me, it's going to be costly. It's going to require that you deny yourself. So what does that involve? I want you to see three things today that are involved in any person's decision to follow Christ, and it requires us to deny self. And I want to put the message again in a single expression to you today, a single sentence that you can get a hold of. It would be this: saying yes to Jesus means that you must say no to yourself. To say yes to Jesus, I must say no to myself. So with that in mind, I want to look at three areas that I believe are involved in really denying ourselves or saying no to ourselves, especially in the culture in which we live today. I'm going to ask you to go back with me to Luke chapter 9, and I want to look at three areas that Jesus targets in this text. The first of which we find in verses 57 and verse 58, in which Jesus teaches that we must lay down our finances or lay down our financial security. This is one of the things that the founding fathers had to come to terms with, and so must we. I'm looking at Luke chapter 9. I'm looking at verse number 57 now. The Bible says, "And it came to pass that as they went in the way, a certain man said unto him, Lord, I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest. And Jesus said unto him, Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. Now the first thing that strikes me about this is why Jesus isn't more happy with this man's decision. He just said, I'll follow you wherever you go. If it were a man today walking in the back doors of this church, even during a sermon, and he were to say, I will follow you and I want to follow Jesus wherever he goes. And you know what we would say? Here is a church prospect. Nobody's ever done that before. Let's sign him up for a class. Let's get him enrolled in membership. Let's make him a leader. He wants to follow Jesus, for crying out loud. That's great. But here's Jesus putting the brakes on and a caution here and say, hey, listen, before you decide to do that, you ought to think about this. Foxes have holes or dens where they go and rest at night. And birds have nests. Well, nests technically are just used for incubation of the eggs, but they have a hovel, or they have a place where they go and sleep each night. But I want you to know that the Son of Man doesn't even have a place where he puts down his head on a regular basis. Now, why would Jesus be so blunt about that with this man? Well, maybe I could put it to you this way. Have you ever noticed how when people or things are successful, that they kind of garner a crowd? You see this right after the Super Bowl, all right? Any year. Suddenly, all these fans for the winning team of the Super Bowl come out of the... Oh yeah, I've always been a fan of the Seahawks, or I've always been a fan of the Patriots. And really? I had no idea. Now they've got caps on, and they're wearing t-shirts and the sweatshirts. It's just that success tends to breed this idea that I want to get in on it. And apparently, from what Jesus is saying, this is what's going on in this man's mind. Jesus' popularity is beginning to grow at this point in his ministry. And boy, you know, early on, you're not so sure if the Jesus stock is going to take off. But once they see it going a little bit, it's time to buy in. I can see this thing going up. And I'm going to get a good return on my investment. And so probably Jesus really pointing out the motive of this man is for his own gain and his own success. You know, some people, they will never get into religion unless there's something in it for me. And apparently that's what's going on with this man. I want to follow Jesus. And Jesus says, listen, you need to think of it in terms of this. When you follow me, there are no guarantees. You might not have a house. You might not have a stable income. And Jesus lived his 3 years of itinerant ministry totally dependent on the financial contributions of those who went around and supported him. So that man needed to come to terms with the fact that following Jesus wasn't going to lend aid to his personal gain. And I think we need to get the same thing. We need to understand that following Jesus may involve the forfeiture of our financial security. Who among us is willing to follow Jesus if it means that? And I think there are honestly few people that are willing to follow Jesus if it means my own livelihood will be threatened. But remember what happened to the earliest disciples, Peter, James, and John, Matthew chapter 4, Mark chapter 1. He calls them to leave their nets. And the Bible says they happily forsook all and followed him. They were leaving behind their livelihoods. Somehow we've gotten in our mind that we'll have our livelihoods and Jesus too. But if Jesus were to ask my livelihood as a Christian, I'd be willing to lay my finances on the line like the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence. And even if it means my finances, the cause is greater than who I am, and I'm going to live for that cause. So saying yes to Jesus involves something. It involves saying no to myself, and it might mean saying no to my financial security in some way. Now, I want to hasten to add, I don't think this is a call to poverty. Every now and again you hear about monks or nuns doing this call to poverty. You might even see, I've mentioned before recently in a sermon about a guy I met one time walking around, you know, living off of begging for people for food and carrying a Jesus banner. So some people have this idea that this is what Jesus is called. You got to give up all your money, sell all that you have, and be absolutely abject poor, and then that means you're going to be godly. Well, not necessarily. You could sell everything you have and not be godly. And I don't think Jesus is advocating giving up all your possessions. He's really talking about the nature of your heart. What holds you? Does Jesus hold you, or do your finances hold you? What does Paul say in the book of Timothy? The love of money is the root of all evil. And so often that has a grip on us that it ought not have. And often it threatens our fellowship and our fellowship of Jesus Christ. Remember, this has been some years ago. I haven't seen these recently. But in the 80s, these were a big deal. The property of t-shirts. You know, I'm the property of the Pittsburgh Steelers, the property of... Here is Arizona. You know, I belong. What are they saying? I belong. This is my team. I bought in. What we need is for Christians to say, I bought in. I am the property of Jesus Christ. And I am here and I belong to Him. And everything else about my life is less important than He is. So if Christ were to ask for your fortune, or even to take your fortune, would you still follow Him? I'm not saying all of us are sitting on a bucket of cash, but all of us in this room, even the person who makes the least amount of money, and I don't know who that is, we all have more than 95% of the rest of the people in the world. We're in the top 5% at least of people in the world. Some people say every American is at least in the top 2%. I'm not going to dispute it. You get the idea. But if he were to ask that, would you give it up? Here's a man who left his business for the Lord's business. We know him through a connection of a missionary in Spain. His name is Randy Wilkins. He and his wife were involved in the family business, furniture business, and making very good money. Upwards close to six figures. It may have involved six figures, but a good income for a family in these here United States. But he felt like something was missing in his life and that God wanted more for him. And he did have some Bible training, and so he believed that God was calling him to leave the business. He left the family business. They resigned out of that, went on deputation for about 4 years to raise support, to live at the mercy of churches sending in money so that they could be on the foreign field. Today he is in Spain, in northern Spain. And the last I heard, they're in an effort to plant a church, he and his wife, a church in Vitoria, Spain, northern Spain. So here was a man willing to leave a secure financial situation in order to follow Christ. Now, I'm not saying that God necessarily is going to do that to you. There ought to be a willingness, though, if he were to say, yes, at the drop of a hat, I'd do it. I'd resign my job. I'd give it all up because the cause is greater than me and my financial security. That's what I'm talking about. So Jesus is saying, if I'm going to follow Him, I've got to deny myself, and that might mean giving up some of the financial perks that I'm used to and the security that I'm used to. C.S. Lewis wrote, I'm thinking off the top of my head now, it's not in my notes, but he said if our living for Christ and our financial giving doesn't curb our living in some way and restrain us from some kind of entertainment or pleasures that we enjoy, then we're really not living the Christian life. It should infringe in some way on how I live and how well I live in America, because I'm committed more deeply to the cause of Jesus Christ than I am to living the American dream. Friends, this is a problem in the American church. I'm not saying necessarily with you, but this is a problem in the American church. We think that we can have our pie and have Christ too. And sometimes Christ wants us to give up the pie to have only Him. This is what it means to follow Him. To say yes to Jesus at times means I must say no to myself. I was just having a Bible study. It's been almost a year ago. I've done about 8 or 9 now of the exchange Bible studies since we've had that seminar a year and a half ago. And this was one of the couples in my neighborhood that I've had contact with for a while. They just live around the corner from where I do. And we did a Bible study with them and all the way through. And they understood the gospel, but they weren't quite sure whether to believe. And part of the reason they were reluctant to believe is because of the influence of the Mormon missionaries who'd been visiting repeatedly. And they've had some connection with the church. They're not Mormons themselves, but they have a friendly opinion of that faith. And you know, the standards of living of the people. In fact, they pointed out to me during the study, it's more than once, at how the Mormons subjugate themselves financially in order to relieve the poor and to help further their church. And they called out the fact that you often will see The Mormon families, they will drive older model cars that will be 8, 10 years old. But the flip side is when you look at modern day Christians, and they weren't just thinking about our church, but the church at large around, you will find them in later model cars. And I didn't think that, but I began to put that together. I've met a number of Mormons together. And he said, when you go into their homes, you'll find their homes are a little bit more simply decorated than the supposedly... Now, I haven't done all that. I haven't been in a whole bunch of Mormon homes, but I think there's a point there. I think they've landed on something that we've forgotten. Following Christ means I don't have to live at a certain level financially. In fact, it probably is getting in my way of following Christ. So instead, we go to our fancy churches that we've built, and we are our Christian churches, and we try to build them a little bit fancier than the church that built just before us, so that ours is a little bit more attractive, so that that person who's tottering on the fence about whether he should go to church at all, if he does decide to go, he might choose to come to ours because we have a bigger stained glass window, or we have a bigger cross on the top of our building, or whatever. And what do? We drive in there with our Mercedes-Benzes, our BMWs. And I'm saying, if you drive one of those, I'm not targeting you today. But I'm just saying, sometimes that's what church becomes. It becomes a parade of, well, how the Lord has blessed me. And we are associating financial prosperity with spiritual blessing. If you want to read more about that, go to my Facebook page. I posted an article this week that I got from someone else on that, about equating financial blessing or financial prosperity and equating it with blessing. God is favoring us all the time, whether or not we necessarily see it in our bank account. And there's a whole article on that. Now, we're getting our Christianity mixed up, and we're floating our finances in and equating that with the blessing of the Lord. And sometimes it's actually keeping us away from following Christ fully the way He wants us to follow Him. All right, that's just one area, right? I told you there would be three. I'm through the first one. First of all, your finances. Secondly, let's talk about your family. Verses 59 and following. And He said unto another, follow Me. Now this is interesting. The first guy in verse 57, he volunteered to follow. I will follow thee. And there's some people that do volunteer to follow Jesus. By contrast, the man in verse 59, Jesus calls to him to follow. Follow Me. But he said, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father. And Jesus said unto him, let the dead bury their dead, but go thou and preach the kingdom of God. So I want to talk about your family, because sometimes, you know, if it's not our finances that get in the way, oftentimes in Christian circles today, well, it's the family. Got to put my kids first. Got to put my spouse first. My the in-laws or whatever. And something about the family gets in the way of serving Christ. So here's the first example. The right to bury the dead. Jesus highlights this with this man. He calls to follow. He says, let me go bury my father. Now, incidentally, this was commended in the Old Testament, in the law, the book of Deuteronomy. Kids are supposed to take care of their parents when they get older. And kids are supposed to make sure that the parents have a decent burial. There's some responsibility. It was commended. So what the guy wants to do here is not wrong. But again, notice Jesus' shocking words to this man. Let the dead bury the dead, but you go and preach the gospel. Apparently, Jesus saw something deeper with this man. A bigger problem. A problem with his motive in his heart. See, many of those that I read this week believe that the man's father wasn't even dead yet. He didn't want to just simply go down the street, have the funeral, and then get on with business. He wanted, first of all, to look after his dad. And whenever he passed off the scene, well, then I would be free at that point maybe to follow you. But not right now. And he was hiding behind his family and refusing to follow Christ. Do you do that? Hide behind your family when you know Christ wants you to be involved in some way. Perhaps you think that Jesus is a little bit uncaring or unloving in this response. In fact, in verse number 58, verse 60, he says, let the dead bury their dead. Now, dead people don't do anything, and he wasn't talking about corpses getting up out of the grave and burying, but he's talking about using a play on words here, talking about two different kinds of dead people. Spiritually dead people, or unconverted people, They can bury the dead as well as anybody. But you, on the other hand, not a whole bunch of people can go and preach the gospel, but you can. So let the spiritually dead bury the physically dead, but you go preach the gospel. You have a responsibility to get at and get into the work of the Lord. Now, I asked you to keep a finger in Luke 14. You're going to see him say this again about this family and our relationship to it. Luke 14, verse 26. Jesus said, "If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple." Is Jesus really saying what I... Did he just say, hate my kids? And my wife too? Man, now I have authority to do what... No. That is not what Jesus is saying. As many have pointed out, Jesus in many other places teaches us what? Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter toward them. Colossians chapter 3. He tells us to love our enemies. Matthew chapter 5. He tells us to love one another in John chapter 13. We can go on and on, but Jesus taught us to love. He's not telling us literally to go hate. Hate is a problem. He's telling us by way of contrast that our affection, our loyalty, our commitment to Christ should be so high that if I look at the other loves in his life, even the closest people in his family, it would be considered hatred compared to this great love that he has for Christ. Jesus really is telling us to put himself ahead of our families. That is the teaching of the New Testament. But I don't always get that. Now, I'm not suggesting, and I got to put another qualifier here, that you neglect family, that you be a church morning, noon, and night, 5, 7 days a week, and you can't do anything with your family. I'm not saying that. I don't think that's I don't think you get that from me as a pastor. I like time away with my family too. All right, we're going to take the rest of the day off, and I'm okay with that because we need time with our family. But you know, oftentimes we hide behind our family when we could incorporate our family in the ministry. I take my boys, whether they like it or not, they go visiting with me from time to time. They get incorporated in ministry and they're learning ministry. I'm not neglecting my family when I do that. I'm doing the work of Christ first and including my family with it. If there are creative ways that we could get our family involved in ministry, we don't have to say, I have to be home until my kids are gone before I can serve God. Bless God, I'll serve God now, and I'll expect Him to help me with my family. And I'm not talking about neglecting your family. Are you getting this? But I'm thinking sometimes we use the family as a shield for getting out of stuff that the Lord wants us to be involved in. Maybe Jesus wants you to take a step forward to say yes to Him. You need to say no to yourself. We want to follow, or we say rather we want to follow, but have we really counted the cost? We are going to have to put our family second. And unfortunately, too many times, Christ plays second fiddle to the family. I'm going to give you an example. I don't always like using examples of living people because they can always do something to hurt you, but... Here's some people that you know. Paul and April Lawrence. They went back to Romania. I think it'll be 3 years this May. And they're planting a church, a gypsy church, in the town of Shardu, Romania. This is an older picture. It's the only one I could find digitally quick. They actually have two kids now. Cedric is the youngest little boy. And a girl, Sienna, who's about 6 now. Is that right? You say that, Cedric? Okay. So, two kids ministering on the foreign field, thousands of miles away, on the other side of the globe from here, and we know what happened last fall. Paul's dad got out of bed, had some kind of problem with his heart, fell at the bed, cracked his head open, was comatose in ICU for a few days at UMC. I took somebody to visit with me. Was that you? Okay. We went and visited him. A few days later, he passed away before Paul could get on a plane and fly all the way back from Romania and get here. Died about 48 hours before he got back. But I think Paul is living what this verse is teaching. Let the dead bury their dead. You go and preach the gospel. They both left their fathers behind in the States when they went to Romania to serve, but they were putting the preaching of the gospel and service for Christ ahead of burying the dead. And it doesn't always happen in this case. Many times you come back and you're able to see your dad and he recovers and gets well. But in this case, God took Claire, Paul's dad, home. But that's okay. Paul is living what this verse is trying to teach. I'm putting Christ ahead of my family. Sometimes people will not obey Christ and follow Him, and they know, and I've talked to them. People have come up to me and said, I'm so glad for you and the ministry and your preaching. When I was a young man, I felt God calling me to preach, but I didn't listen. And I've regretted that decision ever since. Don't regret that. Live for Christ. Put your family second. And make Christ first. Loyalty of your heart. Say no to yourself in order to follow Christ. Hey, maybe your domestic... let me move on to the second thing. Let's go to Luke chapter 9 again. I'm not sure where you might be, but I told you there are three things here in the text. The first was the man's desire for success or financial security. The second was he wanted his family, putting his dad's death ahead of serving Christ. Now we see one more example, verse 61. And another also said, Lord, I will follow thee, but let me first go bid them farewell, which are at home at my house. And Jesus said to him, no man, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of heaven. This is the right to bid farewell. The right to bid farewell. Here the man asks for the privilege of going back and saying goodbye. There's probably more in this again than what meets the eye. He wasn't simply asking to go back and say goodbye. You might recall that when Elijah called Elisha to follow him in the Old Testament, 1 Kings chapter 19, that Elisha asked to go back and say goodbye. He had a sacrifice, ate a meal with his family, and then followed Elijah. That was not condemned. But here it is being condemned. And Jesus is calling us to a greater level of commitment. And probably the idea here is, let me go back, put my house in order. Let me get my daughters married off. Let me settle up things. When the kids are graduated, then I'll be ready to serve God. Again, it's the idea of delay for the sake of putting my house in order and bidding farewell to those that live there. This is my point I want to make to you. Maybe those two domestic duties, putting your house in order, burying the dead, don't occur to you, but we all have domestic duties that we often put ahead of serving Christ. Here are a few that might apply to you after I get married, after we get settled into our home. You know, we sometimes run in our GROW program into new move-ins, and we find out that they've been here more than 6 months or 2 years, and they'll tell us they're Christians. Well, we're still settling in, and we've been here for 2 years. We just haven't got out to church yet. Okay. After the children are old enough, after the children finish their sports schedule, it's really busy right now. They've got baseball in the spring, and soccer in the summer. They play football in the fall, and there's a little bit of time over Christmas. Maybe we'll come visit. After we retire and don't have jobs pulling at us all the time. There are all kinds of domestic kind of duties that we put ahead of serving Christ. For family reasons, we put off the kingdom, and we could do so indefinitely. And again, I'm not talking about neglecting the family. Jesus never encouraged this. But much of what we think would threaten our home actually would help our home if we would put Christ first. Count the cost. If you are going to say yes to Jesus, you need to understand that you have to say no to yourself. The final point today is called your rights. It's really a compilation or extrapolation from what I've said so far. We're just pulling some ideas together. So the outline isn't entirely parallel today. You'll just have to forgive me for that. I'm breaking out of normal homiletic form. But the previous two points talked about the right to bury the dead and the right to bid farewell. Some people think it's within your right to look after your financial security, have enough money in the bank, put some back for retirement. Hey, and nobody in your family would criticize you, and most of the people in your neighborhood would think you're doing well because you're thinking ahead financially, and you're thinking of your family, and you're putting them first. And I want to say to you that Christ is actually calling us to lay down our rights to those things. Normal, commendable, admirable kind of things that nobody else would criticize you for. Then any financial planner would say, that's wise. And he's even saying, I got to put those things aside if they stand in the way of my total commitment to following Christ. So we're talking about rights here. Will you lay down any right you have? This is the all-inclusive category. If I didn't hit you with finances or family yet, then this is for you. Whatever other right you're holding on to and saying, hey, I have a right to this in my life, and that Christ will be second to this, and Christ will look at you and say, Luke chapter 14, flip back there please, and verse 33, and he would say these words, so likewise, whosoever be of you who does not forsake all that he hath cannot be my disciple. Normally, we put this verse with our possessions, and we think he's calling us to a vow of poverty. And after studying it this week, I don't think that's what he's calling us to. He's talking about your dreams, your aspirations, anything that you think you have a right to in this life. And he is saying, he is calling and he's appealing to you, forsake all of it and follow me. Follow me! Whatever it costs. Count the cost and find it's worth following Christ beyond anything that you could hold on to, any of your rights. Several years ago, I read a missionary book. I'm so thankful for good books and people who've read other good books and suggest them to me. I like good books. I'm going to suggest a book, but I don't even think it's in print anymore. In fact, my copy is a copy of the original that was permitted by Moody Press back in 2000 when I got a copy of this, called Have We No Rights by Mabel Williamson. She and her sister were missionaries with the China Inland Mission. That should sound familiar with you if you've done any study of Hudson Taylor. Hudson Taylor was the one who founded the China Inland Mission and brought more than 1,200 missionaries to China under this name. Today, the ministry goes by the name Overseas Missionary Fellowship. In the early part of this century, of the 20th century, rather, she and her sister ministered in China. She later wrote about that and published this book, and the book is entitled Have We No Rights? I can't give you the whole book. I just want to give you some excerpts from the first chapter, which kind of sum up what I've really tried to get at in this sermon. If I'm going to say yes to Jesus, I must say no to myself. And here's what she says. She's quoting from a conversation she had with a fellow Christian missionary in China while she was on the field. One of them brought up the subject about rights, and there was a discussion. And the missionary said, number one, I found that I couldn't stand up for my rights. I couldn't even have any rights. I found that I had to give them up. Everyone, and that was the hardest thing of all. Talking about missions and giving up my right. In the book, she has the right to privacy. You know, you go into a foreign field, sometimes they're so enamored with white people that they want to live inside your house even when you're trying to live in private. Yeah, right to privacy, out the window. How about the right to a normal romance? Or how about the right to romance at all? Because you're a single missionary, and there are more single female missionaries than there are single men missionaries. Right to romance, out the window, serving Christ. But here's what I want to appeal to you. This isn't just about missions. This isn't just for missionaries. This is for every Christian to live with the understanding, I give up my right to this. Hey, do I have a right to go to a church that has a kids program every time I come to church? I want something on Sunday morning when my kids here on Sunday night. And best thought, if you have Wednesday night Bible study, you ought to have something for Wednesday night for kids. I have a right to that. Give up the right. We don't have any rights. We're servants of Christ. I like the second quote too. This is Mabel Williamson quoting now. She says the missionary, and I'm going to add any Christian this is true of, has to give up having his own way. He has to give up having any rights. He has, in the words of Jesus, to deny himself. He just has to give up himself. But that's what I'm saying. That is the message. Say yes to Jesus means that I must say no to myself. In fact, if you're not saying no to yourself in any way, you really aren't following Jesus. You're following yourself and asking Jesus to ride in the sidecar with you. So friend, that's the whole message. If I take up following Jesus, I must lay everything else down. Christianity is not meant to be casual, it's meant to be committed. If you intend to follow Him, it's going to require everything of you. Saying yes to Jesus means that you must say no to yourself. If you've been a parent, you've heard these words more than once. Me first. I'm first. I get the biggest one this time. Constant bickering and fighting and agonizing over whoever's going to be, give me the next screen, going to get the next biggest piece of pie, or going to get first to do something, or get dibs on this or that. And we expect that with kids because they're immature. They haven't learned yet to die to themselves and live for someone else. But it should be different with Christians. We have learned to die to ourselves. and to live for another person. And that person is Jesus Christ. And if I'm not dying, then I'm not really living for Him. I am living for myself. And He is playing second fiddle to my agenda. You've heard the message today. I'm asking you this question. Is there an area in your life that Jesus has spoken to you today by His Spirit in your heart in which you need to say no to yourself? Maybe it's one I've talked about. Maybe it's another area. But if you're going to take up your cross and follow Him, you are going to have to deny yourself. He's appealing to you today. Will you follow? Let us pray. Father, thank You for the moments we've had.